Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that race line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raider Troy Radio, episode 519, coming to you on Wednesday, November 8th. We're going to look forward to USC and Oregon locking horns at Autzen Stadium Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. on Big Fox. We're going to preview the game and so much more here in this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy. You can find us on any audio platform that you have, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, we're there. Email address, rainoftroy@fanside.com. Phone number, 818-643-7227. Suck at what's Bruin Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Lisa D'Aratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back. We're back live, unlike the other day. We had some technical difficulties that prevented us from going live, but we still put out a show anyways. So thank you to everybody joining us on YouTube after the facts, sort of a pre-recorded show there. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, literally nothing changed for you. And we love you all the same anyways. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Cool. we are here to talk about USC and Oregon. I am super pumped about this game strictly from one perspective. This might be my favorite stat to drop ever. Carson Palmer played at Autzen Stadium in his USC career. Not once, not twice, not three times, four times. Carson Palmer played four games at Autzen Stadium as a USC Trojan. Saturday will be the third time that USC will go there as a Pac-12 school. Insane.
The scheduling intricacies with Oregon and Washington and USC.
Bizarre.
In part because of the COVID season, in part because of the weird changeover that happened with the home road splits. It's wild how rarely USC has played these teams and how rarely they've played in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's weird. And then when you look at Oregon coming to the Coliseum, they came in 2000 and then not again until 2006.
Yeah.
It was nuts, like, so long. And here is SC going in 2023. They haven't been to Autzen in 8 years, not since 2015. They were supposed to go in 2020. That, of course, something happened in 2020.
Yeah.
SC couldn't go up there after all. But SC got to host the Ducks back-to-back, 19 and 20, and lost both times. So, here we are with USC going on the road. Saturday night's Veterans Day, 11-11, looking for a victory over the Ducks for the first time since 2011, when the Trojans went as 14.5-point underdogs, which, Alicia, hold on, let me check the line. USC is 14.5-point underdogs this week.
Well, well, well.
Mm. Mm.
Well, well, well.
Mm. Tony in the chat says, what was Carson Palmer's record?
I just looked it up. It's not good.
It was 1-3. Let me tell you, though, about those Oregon games. As a kid, I thought like Oregon was like the big bad boogeyman, because those Oregon games were terrifying. Like 98, 99, 2001, like these were games that were decided by late field goals or overtime. The 99 game is the game in which Carson Palmer famously breaks his collarbone and then ends up redshirting that year as a medical redshirt. That's why he's able to play 5 years and have four trips to Autzen Stadium. But all of those were just disasters until 2002. When 2002 came around and SC was sort of able to slay their nemesis. Carson Palmer throws for 448 yards, sets a school record, and that was kind of like a big deal. It was a big deal to slay the beast that had pretty much wreaked havoc on the Trojans for a long time. And SC sort of did that again in 2011 with the win up in Autzen with Matt Barkley and Marquise Lee and Robert Woods and all those guys getting a big victory there, because SC lost in 2007 in Autzen Stadium. They lost in 2009 and they lost in 2015 also. So it's not been a fun place for SC to play. SC has won there three times in the last, 25 years.
Well, most teams that go there don't win. It's an extremely difficult place to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that USC was always going to be contending with this season, and especially contending with it considering the way that the season has gone. But you also have to find a way to win games in those difficult environments.
Yeah.
If you want to be an elite football team. And we know that this USC team isn't elite, but a consolation victory to keep... not even a consolation victory, because beating Oregon keeps USC alive and actually puts USC in a favorable position to to the Pac-12 title game, wildly enough. It's dig deep time now.
This is not true, but it feels true that it's almost like losing to Washington has made it clearer what SC needs to do to get to the Pac-12 championship game. It's obviously not true. You'd have been better off beating Washington to get to the Pac-12 championship game, but the path is super clear. Like, SC wins out and Washington wins out, and there's a rematch in Vegas. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And Washington's going to be favored in the rest of their games. SC's very much not favored on Saturday night. But if they find a way to channel the 2011 game and get a win in Eugene, they're going to be favored at home against UCLA. And then suddenly, it's not crazy. By getting by losing last week, it sort of eliminates the chance of that three-way 8-1 finish in the conference, where Washington, Oregon, and SC could have sort of beaten each other and gone round robin and finished 8-1, and then you would have been beholden to tiebreakers. But now that's not the case anymore. So I don't know. Obviously, you'd be better off having won last week than not, but here we go. It's going to be a wild ride on Saturday. And luckily for SC, they've done this before while being a 14.5-point dog in Eugene. And then there's Oregon and their own boogeyman, which is they have a history of bottling national championship potential winning seasons in November, particularly at home. 2011. Number 18 USC comes into Autzen Stadium, beats number 4 Oregon with a 9-1 record, beats them 38-35. 2012, number 1 and 10-0 Oregon loses to number 14 Stanford 17-14 in overtime. And just last season, number 6 Oregon with an 8-1 record, sound familiar, loses to number 25 Washington 37-34. So history's on SC side in that sense, but everything else, Alicia, looking at the numbers, and let's get into it.
I'm in danger.
This might be the worst matchup I've ever seen SC have, quite honestly.
I was putting together our visual element on YouTube, And the I'm in danger soundbite is absolutely 100% accurate. It's it's a mismatch of considerable proportions, even bigger than when any of the other ones that we've put together were USC's offense versus USC's defense versus an offense against Washington looked pretty darn bad, and somehow the matchup, when you look at the numbers compared to Oregon, not good.
It's not
like there's hundreds of spaces of ranks between USC's offense, USC's defense, and Oregon's offense.
Yeah, it's lots of gaps, and you would hope that SC is somehow able to not let Oregon parlay that into a win. But hey, you could parlay that into a win, of course, Trojan fans, when you sign up for DraftKings, because DraftKings is running a new promotion that you won't want to miss. New users can place a $5 bet for your $5 first bet and instantly claim $200 in bonus bets. You'll also be rewarded with a separate no sweat single game parlay every single time when you opt in. All you have to do is sign up using the code Reign of Troy, all one word. And using that code, Reign of Troy, not only gets you these great bonuses, but helps support this very podcast. So if you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code Reign of Troy. Of course, the offer is only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to gamble responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Lisa, you ready to get into this one?
Let's do it.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
All right, let's get into USC and Oregon. The Ducks come into this one ranked number 6 in the AP poll, number 6 in the coaches poll, number 6 in the college football playoff rankings. But the metrics sort of love them even more. They are number 4 in SP Plus, number 2 in FEI. Jeff Zagarin has them at 4th. This is absolutely potentially one of the best teams that SC has faced in a really long time. I think BetaRank has Oregon as the highest ranked Pac-12 team ever of the Pac-12 era at the current present time. This is, you know,
I'm in danger.
Yeah.
The problem with Oregon is that they're a very, as we're about to sort of lay out, they're a very balanced team that is unusual. Usually the really good defenses that USC plays, the offenses, with maybe the exception of last year's Utah team, the offenses are just a little bit of a step outside of like the top 10 elite, top 20 elite kind of situation.
Right.
Oregon is balanced and very strong on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, it starts on offense. The number 2 SP Plus ranked offense in the country. It's led by Bo Nix, the Auburn transfer. 78% completion percentage. He's thrown for 2,700 yards, 25 touchdowns, 2 picks, quarterback rating of 180.2, 37 carries, 116 yards, and 5 touchdowns on the ground. He's only been sacked 4 times all year. Only Toledo has allowed fewer sacks than Oregon in the country. And it's a running game that he has with Bucky Irving, the Minnesota transfer, 120 carries, 821 yards, 9 touchdowns. He's also had 35 catches through the air for a touchdown as well. Missed practice on Tuesday for undisclosed reasons, but was back in uniform today, Wednesday, in Eugene. So probably expect him to play as normal, but we know that the Trojans can't stop the run. They can't stop the pass. They can't stop anything. Bucky Irving, absolutely the danger man. He's joined with Jordan James in the backfield, 545 yards, 9 touchdowns himself as a running back as well. The receivers, Troy Franklin, 58 catches, 946 yards, 10 touchdowns on the year. Then there's a bunch of transfer receivers. Tez Johnson from Troy, 46 catches, almost 600 yards and 6 touchdowns. There's Trayshawn Holden, the Narbonne man from Alabama, 27 catches, 271 yards and 4 touchdowns. Gary Bryant Jr., our friend Simon Jabari's favorite player of all time. The USC transfer, 20 catches, 265 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then Terrence Ferguson is the tight end to watch as well. The offensive line is one of the best in the country, if not the best in the Pac-12 for sure. This has been what they are. Oregon for several years now has been the big physical offense in the Pac-12, and they continue to be that way. What can you say? This is a horrible matchup for a USC team that has no full-time defensive coordinator. It's Sean Nua and Odom or co-DCs. We don't know who's calling plays. They know who's calling plays. We don't know who's calling plays. Look at the numbers. It's not good.
For those who are listening at home, we have a split screen, 2 columns. On one side is Oregon's offense. On one side is USC's defense. We have the national ranks on both, and Oregon is top 11 in every single one of the ranks that we have here. SP Plus scoring, total yards per play, pass yards, rush yards. USC is 100th or worse in all but one of the metrics on the defensive side of the ball. 120th in rush yards per game, 123rd in total yards, 124th in scoring points per game allowed. It's bad. It's bad. And the worst thing here is that We just watched this USC defense get taken to task by a Washington offense that we knew coming in was going to be very formidable in their passing game. We knew that their receiving core is very difficult to deal with. They have a great quarterback. But the one thing that they really don't focus on and haven't focused on is the running attack. That was not a Washington team that came in with running as an identity, with running as part of their key plan towards winning. And they went out and put 300 yards on USC's rush defense. The difference here is that Oregon has a more balanced defense. They have a rushing attack that is extremely formidable, averaging 208 rush yards per game. They have running backs in Bucky Irving and Jordan James who will punish you. What I've seen of Bucky Irving this year, every time I've watched Bucky Irving, I've just thought to myself, man, USC struggles to get running backs on the ground. USC struggles to complete tackles, and Bucky Irving is a missed tackle machine.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very, very scary matchup for USC to go up against a team that will try to beat you on the ground and will try to beat you through the air and can do both very effectively without really making a ton of mistakes. You've put together some numbers about how clean this offense plays, which is another big part of the problem, because USC's defense realistically needs the opposing offense to do them some favors to get some stops, and that's not in Oregon's DNA.
I don't know what's cleaner, the air in Eugene or Oregon's offense, because first in the country in turnovers, they've only turned the ball over 4 times. Two interceptions, two fumbles. That's it. They're second in sacks allowed. They're fifth in the country in tackles for loss allowed. So they don't have negative plays. They don't give up sacks. They don't turn over the ball. They are third in the country on third downs. They're number one in scoring offense. They just do everything right. Like, we could look at the Washington team coming in last week, the Washington offense, and say, well, we know that Washington's offense maybe has the highest ceiling of anyone in America. You know, right up there with SC, Oregon, and LSU. Washington might have the highest ceiling. But they had struggled, right? They had struggled against Arizona. They had struggled against Arizona State. They had struggled at times against Stanford. There's no struggling for Oregon. Like, where is the game in which they've struggled this season? Like, yes, they had to sort of pull one out against Texas Tech on the road in week two, but they answered the bell there. Washington was a game that was just a heavyweight fight, just, you know, trading haymakers, and they lost because they missed a field goal to send it to overtime at the end of the game. Like, this is a team that really hasn't been, they haven't truly been beaten. They haven't been stopped. They haven't been any of those things. And I think that that's got to be worrisome for SC when you go into this game. And what is SC's angle of attack here? I don't know what it is, because yeah, SC was in a game, you know, 5 days ago against Washington where they had a chance to sort of outscore Washington. I don't think that's an option here. I don't think you can outscore Oregon, because Oregon's going to go, you know, toe-to-toe for you on that side of the ball. And then when we talk about Oregon's defense, about how good Oregon's defense is, they're probably going to get some stops against SC too. Like, I don't think SC is going to have the ease at gaining yards that they did last week against Washington. And not that Washington's defense is bad, but it's certainly not as stout as Oregon. So, what is it? I know nothing can get worse than what SC did defensively against Washington, but it also could, you know?
Well, this Oregon defense, Oregon offense just put up 63 on Cal.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a Cal defense that USC put up 50 on, but 63 is still 63. And I think the scary thing about this Oregon offense is that they have, I know it was Portland State, but they have put up 81 points on a team,
mm-hmm.
which means they have had a game where the opposing defense in front of them was basically just a bunch of cardboard cutouts. But most teams, even against cardboard cutouts, don't execute well enough for that stretch of time to put up 81 on you. There's just only so many possessions, yeah. And there's only so many chances. And this Oregon team did. And I know it's Portland State, but when they put up 63 on Cal, you look at it and think, well, it's not like Cal's defense is considerably worse than USC's defense at this point. So this is a major worry. The only plus side, the only thing that maybe gives USC an in here is that Oregon did have a stretch in the middle of the season where they maybe weren't maximizing their points. They lose the Washington game inexplicably. The more I look at it, the more I think about it, by only putting up 33 points on a Washington defense that USC has now established can be got. They only put up only 38 on Washington State. They only put up 35. Well, 35 on Utah is impressive, but that's how much USC put up on Utah, more or less. So they've had a couple games here where maybe they weren't quite as infallible and effective. So that's the hope. The other thing that USC has in this matchup is the element of surprise.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what kind of changes USC is going to try and make. And we've established that USC doesn't have the time to make extreme changes, but there are key personnel changes potentially that could be made. There are key simplification changes that could be made.
Yeah.
That in combination could result in potentially USC having a little bit more juice. And the element of surprise is real. in the sense of Oregon could get caught overlooking this USC team. I think Oregon could easily come into this game with the mentality that, yeah, USC's offense is really good, but the Oregon offense is going to roll through USC and put up 80. And a little bit of overconfidence possibly works in USC's favor too here. But these are all, in my mind, these are all hopeful kind of things that maybe Oregon can only put up 40. When you look at the raw numbers, when you look at what Oregon does well and what USC has done poorly all season, the matchup doesn't bode well.
Yeah, Quinn in the chat says that SC has the pieces to make Oregon work harder to score if they line up right. Yeah, but potentially. But what is lining up right? Like that's the thing you got to figure out if you're able to do that. Even when SC has made the personnel choices that people want to see, having Eric Gentry in there, it's not like, yeah, Eric Gentry makes a lot of plays. He also doesn't prevent teams from driving down the field because this is a defense as a whole that just can't make the stops even when they got the right guys in there. So it's going to be difficult. And like you said, the added wrinkle for SC is that the unknown of what the game plan is going to be. How is the game plan going to be different than what Alex Grinch would have dialed up? Are they just going to start throwing things at the wall? Are they going to be more aggressive? Are they going to be less aggressive? Are they going to change the coverages? Are they going to, put different focuses on different guys? Like, whatever it is, they might do, and that might, just by changing up something, you might find a spark somewhere. But that might get you a stop or two more. I don't know if it's going to get you enough stops to win the game. And so that's going to be the thing that SC is going to have to figure out. Like Matt in the chat says, can you tackle in space? This is the biggest problem that SC has, like, bar none.
The truthful answer is no.
No.
No. Yeah. USC has not proven that they can tackle in space. One of my over-unders is going to be directly a question of missed tackles, like, because that has been an issue for USC. So,
yeah.
This is, but we say all these things based on the defense that we have seen. There is a sliver of hope from a USC perspective that the defense can respond, that the defense can show us something a little bit different and have a slight improvement. And that's sort of, I think, where you hinge. You got to hope that Nua and Odom cook something up that catches Oregon off guard. And that catches Oregon sleeping and maybe proves to be the difference in the game. I think when I look at the offense versus the defense, the Oregon offense versus the USC defense, it comes down to the thing about there are only so many possessions and yes, USC might end up in the same situation like Washington where they only managed to stop Oregon from scoring touchdowns on two of the drives that they face and that's that. But in the end, there are only so many possessions. To me, this matchup comes down to what happens on the other side of the ball, because the other side of the ball is a way worse matchup in a lot of ways. If you're hinging everything on USC's offense being elite and overcoming their defense, this is not the same challenge as it was against Washington. And USC's offense, as much as I don't want to blame USC, I'm not blaming USC's offense for the Washington loss, but they also failed that test in terms of could they be so good that they undid the damage of what their defense was doing on the other side. USC needs to do that again this week, and it is significantly harder when
they failed to throw a perfect game.
Yeah, they failed to throw a perfect game. And again, I'm not blaming them for that, but they absolutely need a perfect game in this game.
Yes.
And I think when I look at the matchup between USC's offense and Oregon's defense, I am far less confident in their ability to potentially throw a perfect game against a defense that has shown itself to be stronger consistently through the season than Washington's defense was.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that the other thing, it's been mentioned in the chat that if SC's defense is just marginally better, SC's chances of winning goes up drastically. And that's true. We've talked about it before, that the defense doesn't have to be a world beater defense. Sorry, if you're hearing a bunch of sounds, Jesse is...
Jesse found a soda bottle.
And is and going
she's
insane.
She's just munching away, and she's too far away from either of us to grab to it from it, her. You know. So yeah, that's what that
if
chomping noise.
If it gets more annoying, we'll step in here. But SC's defense doesn't have to be much better for the offense to be in a more position to win the game. We talked about it last week. If the defense got one more stop, then SC has the ball with the chance to win the game on the final drive, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. how close it was. And if, you know, they get the fourth down stop on the sack, that they don't get, you know, they're not able to get Michael Penix down on that potential sack, then that's an issue that they're able to get one more stop and then take it away. So, yeah, it's can SC be just a little bit better and that change things? Maybe, but I think that the difficulty is added in Oregon's defense. And let's get into talking about Oregon's defense, because Oregon's defense is better than Washington's defense. The Ducks ranked first. The Trojans are ranked first in SP plus defense, but the Ducks are 21st. The Oregon defense, of course, led on the defensive line by Jordan Birch, the South Carolina transfer, and Brandon Dorlis. They've combined for 12.5 tackles for loss, 4 sacks for Dorlis, 6 pass breakups, 5 quarterback hurries. He's sort of the danger man to keep an eye on from a pass rush perspective. The other guy I really like in this defense is safety Evan Williams, the Fresno State transfer. 53 tackles, leads the Ducks there. 4 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks. And they have star nickelback, sort of like a box safety that Oregon puts together with Tysheem Johnson, an Ole Miss transfer. 47 tackles, 2 picks, 2.5 tackles for loss. And this is an interesting defense because they're just solid. They're solid at everything. They will get after you. Look at all the pressure that they brought to Colorado and, you know, just completely wrecked havoc with Shedeur Sanders and stopped them from sort of doing anything in that game. That's a sort of element that, you know, SC cannot have in this game, right? They cannot let themselves sit there and be beholden to a pass rush like we saw in the Notre Dame game, like we saw in sort of the Utah game at times, where the Trojans struggled on the offensive line to do things that, you know, allowed the offense to move the ball down the field. Because this is the problem that could end up rearing its head. Luckily for the Trojans on offense, they got the run game absolutely working last week, even without
Marshawn Lloyd.
He was out injured, presumably injured, and missed the game, and they were fine. They were able to run the ball on Washington, no problem. If they're able to do that again against Oregon, I think it makes everything else easier. It opens everything else. If they're able to get the screens to work, I think that opens things up even more. They have the ability to put points on the board. I think that we know that SC, you know, they have the number one offense in SP Plus for a reason. And I think that you should believe in Caleb Williams. He's arguably the best player in college football, especially on offense. And anytime you have him with the idea of like house money, especially when you just fired your defensive coordinator, you've got nothing to lose in this sort of game. Yeah, anything can happen in that sense. I think that's the hope and the upshot for the offense.
Yeah, but this is also the best defense that USC will have faced since Utah.
Yeah,
since Utah and Notre Dame, and we saw what Utah and Notre Dame were able to do in terms of limiting USC's offense, and that's the concern is that USC has been able to absolutely demolish most of the middling to bad defenses that they have faced, But the two defenses this season that are ranked in the sort of top 15, which if we're talking SP plus, top 15, Utah and Notre Dame both, Oregon slightly out of that and ranked 20th, but still up in that tier of defenses. And USC was limited to 32 points against Utah. USC had a bajillion turnovers against Notre Dame. And that is a trend that USC has to overturn in order to have a chance in this game. Because 32 points isn't going to cut it. You know, 20 points isn't going to cut it. 42 points wasn't enough to cut it against Washington on the other side. And this is going to be a real test for USC. It's going to be a test of USC's mentality on offense, mm-hmm. their execution. This is going to be a huge test of USC's offensive line.
Yeah.
Especially because I sort of isolated a couple stats that I think are really important when it comes to the offense. And I want to make it clear that, like, this is not putting the result on the offense in a bigger picture sort of sense. USC's offense is being asked to compete at a level that is unsustainable and unreliable and unfair to them in terms of what they have to do in order to win football games. But the reality is, as we pointed out, they were very, very close to winning games against Utah, winning games against Washington.
Mm-hmm.
If the offense had executed just as much as if the defense had executed, understanding that the offense is executing at A-minus and the defense is at an F.
Yeah.
But if the offense is an A or an A-plus, they win the game. And if the defense is at a D, they win the game. Like, recognizing that that's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the offense, they haven't really been, like, there's a key factor here where USC chooses not to run the ball at times in games where I think that if they committed more to their run game, they might have a chance. So USC lost games to Utah and Washington while averaging 11.7 and 9.7 yards per carry when they handed the ball off to a running back. But running backs in those games only got 16 carries and 12 carries respectively. In games where USC has had 27 or fewer rushing attempts, and that is rushing attempts across the board because I didn't parse out the quarterback rushes, just rushing 27 or fewer rushing attempts,
mm-hmm.
USC is 2-4 in the Lincoln Riley era. There is a correlation that maybe needs to be explored further to really nail down how far this correlation goes, but there is a correlation between USC losing games and USC not running the ball.
And now, the score effects factor in a little bit, but not totally, because I think the Notre Dame game is the only game that they were truly down and needed to throw.
Mm-hmm. And they still ran the ball 37 times in the Notre Dame.
Yeah, and that was the game that didn't fit that bill. Yeah.
My broader point here is that USC was extremely efficient at running the ball in a yards per carry sort of metric. I was just on the Quack 12 podcast on Tuesday, and Hithlade was pulling out stats about USC's rushing efficiency in the advanced stats metrics and how effective and efficient USC is in the advanced stats metrics on the ground. Now, the reason I bring this up is it would be great if USC could learn these lessons and run the ball and see if that can stabilize the offense and slow down the game, not expect the defense to be on the field for as many plays, basically play a time of possession game as much as possible in theory. The problem with leaning on this is Oregon's run defense is extremely good.
Mm-hmm.
They have limited teams to 3-point something yards per carry. I have it written down somewhere here.
Yeah.
3.25 yards per carry allowed this season. They are very good against the run. They have a very strong defensive front. They have linebackers who are extremely highly graded that take care of business. On top of being able to go out and get at the quarterback, on top of being able to just essentially win the line of scrimmage, USC's offensive line has to respond to that in this game. That is the the big question for USC's offensive line is, can they hold up? Can they buy Caleb Williams some time? Can they give running lanes to Marshawn Lloyd and Austin Jones?
Mm-hmm.
Can they provide a foundation upon which USC can score 40 plus points?
Yeah.
That is my, I don't know that I'm willing to bet on that when it comes to USC's offensive line this year. That is the matchup that there needs to be a response.
Yeah.
This is also a matchup where USC, a now increasingly maligned USC receiving group that is being criticized for not blocking well,
mm-hmm.
not creating separation, not being productive enough across the board. They will be going against, I think, by far the best secondary that USC has played this year. This
Notre
is,
Dame. I would put Notre Dame ahead.
Well, okay, yeah, Notre Dame there. But, you know, this is a stacked secondary. You know, you named some guys who are very good, and there's a bunch of other guys who are also very, very good in that secondary. You know, Tashim Johnson and Steven Stevens and all of those guys who maybe aren't tearing up the stat sheet but are playing extremely well.
Kyrie Jackson,
yeah.
Couple of picks.
This is an issue for USC that needs to have a response from players in those positions. And without a response from players in those positions, USC won't be able to put up the points that they need to steal a game here relative to what you're going to see from the defense.
So let's talk about the case for SC. What is the case for SC? Because I think if SC wins this one, it will be a stealing of it, right? We agree on that?
Yeah. The case for SC is a uncharacteristically sloppy game from Oregon, in the sense of they commit the turnovers that let USC get into the game. I'm trying to look and see what's their worst game in terms of turnovers lost.
Well, they've only had four all season. so it makes it very difficult in that sense.
They had two turnovers against Cal. That was their season high.
Yeah.
So they need, it needs to be like a three turnover kind of game. Or it's like a two turnovers on offense and one on special teams kind of game.
Right.
And opening the door for USC's defense to basically have gotten a couple of stops. And then the argument for USC is straight up Caleb Williams. It's just straight up Caleb Williams, because this is the thing. USC has an elite Heisman winner at quarterback who is one of the best playmakers I have ever seen at the position. He is special. He does special things. He is Superman. He does find ways to win football games single-handedly. And sometimes that works against him because, you know, Marshawn Lloyd is there. You don't need to win this single-handedly.
Austin Jones,
you know, Zachariah Branch, all of these guys that has worked against them. But when it comes down to it, if USC wins this game, it will be because Caleb Williams has done something spectacular on offense and gotten USC to the point where they are winning. They're winning the game by scoring 50 some odd points and just winning the shootout, which, being on the road at Autzen, would make it even more spectacularly unexpected for USC to do that.
I think the key is, if SC is going to win this game, it's going to be doing something early to grab some sort of momentum on the road, because, and SC has done that. SC the last 3 weeks have had three very good first quarters, especially on offense. They scored, 14 against Utah. They scored 17 against Cal. They scored a bunch of points early on against Washington last week. You know, 28 in the first half, all told. So, like, SC has started out quickly on offense the last 3 weeks. You have to do that on the road, Knotson, especially because I think one of the keys to potentially stealing this game is getting Oregon to die by the landing. Like, they win by the landing and die by the landing, and one of those things is fourth down attempts. We know that Dan Lanning is willing to, you know, roll the dice aggressively and try to steal possessions. We know that he's willing to try to extend drives and try to steal points. not settle for field goals and go for touchdowns and those kind of things. Look at the Washington game. That's the reason that you can say that they lost the game. 0-for-3 on third on fourth downs.
Yeah.
Every other game this season, they are 9-of-11 on fourth downs, but they were 0-and-3 in that game, and that's the game that they lost. You look at last year.
Well, can I share us?
Hold on 1 second. Okay. Last year, they lose the Oregon State game in which they blow the big lead, 0-for-5 on fourth down. So if you find ways to pressure Oregon by scoring early and sort of making Dan Lanning into being aggressive, and you're able to stop those aggressive plays, that would be big. But then again, do you trust USC's defense to make the fourth down stop?
Well, what has USC done on fourth down this season?
It's got to be bad.
56.5%.
What?
97th nationally.
Yeah.
That's bad. That's bad. So again, like, there are avenues for USC to there's a formula for USC to win this game, but that formula is against type.
Yes.
So that's where the real concern is. Unless you see the response from the defense, unless the defense being simplified and a couple personnel tweaks creates a defense that is basically what USC needs to prove is that it's not that the defense wasn't talented enough all along. It's that the scheme, the play calling, the personnel decisions were all that terrible, and basically justify the Alex Grinch firing and prove that that the players themselves were not at the heart of the issue. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
I don't think that these players that USC has to a man are as bad as they have collectively been. But I don't know that changes in the span of 7 days.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about it before. Oklahoma's defense got worse when they fired Mike Stoops in 2018. So it theoretically could get worse, but then again, the Washington game, Washington basically threw a no-hitter on offense. So practically, just about. So what can you do in that sense? Like, it almost can't get worse in that sense. So let's get to over-under, play a game of over-under, and preview this game a little bit more before we get to the mailbag.
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I got to take an under here. I got 3 unders to take.
I'm going
to
do an under here.
All right. Let's start with our records. I'm up big. I'm 34-26. You had a big week last week. You went 4-2. I went 3-3. So you're at 28-32, still under 500. But 6-game lead for me. You could go 6-0, and I can go 0-6, and we'll be tied.
There we go.
So that
we need.
Could theoretically work.
Got as much of a chance of tying this up as USC has of winning that game.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
So
All right. Let's start with your first over under. What do you got?
I got 4.3 USC rushing yards per carry. This is getting back to what I was talking about earlier, that the rushing game could be a big factor for USC, but Oregon is very good at stopping the rush, so USC needs to do what no one has really done except for Texas Tech this year. Opponents playing Oregon are averaging 3.25 yards per carry this season. The high of the season was 5.44 that they gave up to Texas Tech, and it's no wonder that Texas Tech was a team that challenged them and nearly upset them. Washington did manage to average 4.3 yards per carry against Oregon, which is impressive considering what we've talked about with Washington not really trying to establish the run game all that much this season. USC this season is averaging 5.42 yards per carry. They have averaged 6 yards per carry or more in almost half of the games that USC has played this year.
Yeah.
They just choose not to run very often. So we're going 4.3. Will USC better the yard per carry average of Washington?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to take the over on this, which locks you into the under. I'm going to say yes because I don't think 4.3 is that much in terms of, you know, comparing to SC's averages. I know that SC has struggled against Utah and Notre Dame and whatnot, and this is going to be another one of those those fronts that can absolutely give SC fits that way. But I really liked what they did last week. Even without Marshawn Lloyd, like, they were able to run the ball well. I don't think rushing for more than 430 is a lot to ask. The biggest hurdle for this, though, and the biggest risk in this overpick is you haven't parsed this out for running backs, which means sacks matter.
Yeah.
And if this is a game in which Caleb Williams gets sacked four or five times, that's going to make the yards per carry average, you know, be difficult to sort of overcome that way.
Yeah, and it's going to be a little bit complex here.
Yeah.
But Notre Dame held USC to 2.95 yards per carry. Shockingly, USC had 6.3 yards per carry against Utah. So against a good defensive front in mm-hmm. both of those games, USC had completely different outcomes. And that 2.95 against Notre Dame was heavily influenced by sacks.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the next one, which is my first one. Over under 7.94 Oregon yards per play. That's what the Trojans allowed to Washington last week. That game was at the Coliseum. This one, of course, on the road, Rich Brooks Field at Autzen Stadium. Oregon ranks third in FBS in yards per play, averaging 7.74. So can they be 20% of a yard for better, a fifth of a yard better at 7.94 is the over-under here.
So my policy on over-under has been just to take whatever signals that the defense is worse. That's been my policy this season. But I'm going to go against that in this one. I'm taking the under here.
Wow.
And that is just...
I actually think this is a case of optimistic Alicia.
No, it's not optimistic Alicia. It's just that 7.94 would be the highest total of the season in terms of yards per play.
Yeah.
It would be the second highest in the Riley, or let's say the Grinch era at USC. Tulane, and it's still stunning, 10.37 yards per play that Tulane had. Which is just goes to show what a catastrophic game that was. But that's just a very, very high yard per play average. And I know that USC's defense has been catastrophically bad this year. But I think that while the simplified defense won't make USC considerably better on defense, I think it might just keep more things in front of them. I think Oregon might end up running more plays, and it just being a little bit more of a 7.5 yards per play yeah. for Oregon, which would still be incredibly impressive and still not a good defensive showing. But yeah. if we're talking about 8 yards per play across an entire game, where theoretically there is a universe where Oregon is up big at a point during this game and is just running the clock, I like the under here.
Okay. All right, I hear you. Part of the chat hears you too, by the way. Thomas in the chat says, responding to something else that you said earlier. Normally, I would agree with Alicia, but I think the confusion factor should at least make USC's defense a little cleaner and tighter on defense, meaning that the defense will be less confused without Alex Grinch there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's wishful thinking. I really do. Like,
I think the defense will still have physical beats that will still result in a poor defensive showing, but if they just cut out a couple of plays where it's just the nobody yes. on the field knew what they were supposed to be doing.
But also, it's not like Sean Nua and Odom have not been there. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
fair.
They've been there the whole time.
But they haven't been calling the plays.
Calling the plays specifically, but like, do you think that the process of calling plays changed? I don't think it really does. Like,
I think the plays that are called and the playbook of the installation is just going to be narrowed down to the ones that are already that I think that Nua and Odom are going to lean on the defensive plays, the defensive setups and schemes that they feel more confident that the players on the field can actually execute. Yeah. And that might result in a slight improvement.
It might result in a slight improvement, and they can only get better in that sense. So that's where I agree. I just don't know that, you know, I want to, you know, sort of caution people. This is the thing that, you know, when someone becomes the fall guy, and in this case, Alex Grinch is the fall guy, not the fall guy in the sense that, like, wasn't the problem. He was the problem, right? But also that him not being here doesn't mean that everybody else is the perfect angel in terms of, like, their ability to do everything right. Like, and that one guy was doing everything wrong, and then you eliminate the wrong guy and now everybody is right. Like, that's not how it works. Like, so just have some pessimism there, I guess.
Maybe, oh, I do. Bit. I have a lot of pessimism, just not 8 yards per play pessimism.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the next one. What do you got?
I've got 10.5 missed tackles for USC. USC is averaging 10.8 missed tackles per game. They had 9 missed tackles versus Washington. And I think this Oregon team, when you look at the playmakers that they have, are missed tackle creators. You have the drop ready, Michael?
I'm in danger.
Yeah.
Of having more than 10.5 missed tackles.
I've never hit an over quicker than this.
Yeah.
It's just it's over. The one thing that I think SC could, I hear you that if things are simple and it's just gonna be like, we are just going to run cover 2. We are just going to run cover 3. Like, whatever, it's as simple as just picking a defense on Madden and just playing the thing, which it's not, doesn't work that way. But let's imagine that it is for a second. You're still, like, the problem is that they still can't tackle. Because part of the issue I thought in the Washington game was, in the times where Penix checked down because the dropping 8 was working, which the dropping 8 was not working, like, in reality, but the times where Penix checked down and sort of played into the dropping 8, he would dump it off, and then the guy would catch it at the line of scrimmage. There's a defender 2 yards off the line of scrimmage, and he misses the tackle, and then since the rest of the defense is soft because they've dropped back into a zone, the ball carrier is then able to get 8, 9, maybe 10 yards and a first down. And it's like, well, if you would have just made the tackle there, now it's 2nd and 8, and maybe they you can force them to sort of be behind the chains a little bit. But SC couldn't get those things because SC cannot tackle. So
yeah,
you got to be able to tackle. So all right, let's go to the next over under, which is mine. 323.5 passing yards for Caleb Williams. That is what Matt Barkley threw in 2011. 323. That's the line. There it is. That's the line. Michael Penix threw for 316 against Oregon last month, including a bunch on that final drive where he came down and sort of had his Heisman moment against the Ducks there in the fourth quarter. Cam Ward at Washington threw for Washington State threw for 438 against the Ducks last month. 438. We talk about how good Oregon's defense is, and they are damn good. They allowed 438 passing yards to Washington State. But in conference play, Oregon is 2nd in the conference in conference play alone in pass defense, only allowing 227.5 yards per game. So pretty much the only two quarterbacks that have been able to throw against Oregon are named Penix and Ward. Can Williams become that guy? We saw him 2 weeks ago throw for 369 against Cal, 312 last week against Washington. 323.5 is the line.
I've got the under here pretty firmly under. This Oregon secondary is very good. If Caleb has 300 yards against this Oregon secondary, it will be an outstanding performance from Caleb Williams. I don't know that I would. Well, I know I'm not betting on that, on Caleb being up over 320, 323. That 438 that Washington State had on Oregon is by far, it's an outlier. It's by far the most that anybody has had. Penix's 316 was the second most that this secondary has given up in terms of pass yardage. And we already talked about how I think that USC, they may have to, I mean, if they can't get the running game going, they may have to just force it on with the pass game. But yeah. I don't know that I'm 100% in belief that it'll result in that level of passing yards production.
Yeah. Okay. What's your last one? What do you got?
I've got 2.5 Bucky Irving rushes of 20 plus yards. So Bucky Irving, interestingly enough, he has 4 rushes this season of 40 plus yards, but only 5 of 20 plus this season. He actually ranks 71st nationally in 20 plus yard rushes, which is just far, far less than I would have expected. For reference, Marshawn Lloyd is 6th nationally with 10 rushes of 20 plus yards. But Washington's Dylan Johnson had 4 rushes of 20 plus yards against USC.
It was only four.
Jay Knott had 2, but the 2 that he had were big breakers, which I think is very possible that is what Bucky Irving sort of does. So I set the line at 2.5. I couldn't in good conscience go up to 3, even though it feels like I should lean this line higher. It just 3 is very high when he has 5 all season.
Yeah, I looked it up. Dylan Johnson has 6 all year. 4 came against SC.
That's a good point.
Take the over. The chat is saying take the over. Kenny says take the over. Dale says take the over. It's gonna be over. Absolutely over. I'm going with the over until there's a reason not to. And maybe this would be a safer take if it was a 1.5, but
which I would have never gone down to. I think the way I get this, the way I win this, is if Oregon does that thing where we know Bucky Irving is the dude, but also Jordan James gets run, it could be Jordan James that breaks him. So.
I would just say Jordan James, the guy with the two first names.
Bucky Irving has also two first names.
Bo Nix almost does, but he's plural.
Hey, just wait for people to start saying Nix.
Yeah. Let's get to the last one. Last over under. I got over under 0.5. I don't like doing yes and no's, but this is a yes and no. 40-yard Taj Washington catch, over under 0.5. Will he have a 40-yard catch in this game? The reason I bring this up, Taj has eight this season, the most by a Trojan wide receiver since Marquise Lee had 11 in 2012, the year that he won the Biletnikoff Award. Only South Carolina's Xavier Leggett has more. He has 9 catches of 40-plus yards. So Oregon's only allowed 3 all season, but Taj basically does it every single week. Will he get a catch of 40-plus yards?
Yeah, I'm taking the under on this just because of what you just said. Oregon has not allowed explosive passing plays like that. And I think if I'm Oregon, I get to key in pretty heavily on Taj Washington at this point because he is wide receiver 1.
Yeah,
for USC, and until someone like Mario Williams or Dorian Singer or Michael Jackson III or Kyron Hudson or somebody steps up and starts being the man in this offense, aside from potentially like Brendan Rice, then I think Taj is going to get a little bit of a blanket put on him if I'm Oregon. Is Taj capable of doing that? Yes. Yeah. I just don't like the matchup with the secondary. Taking the under as a result.
those three that they've allowed all season, one by Penix, two by Ward, by the way. So the two guys who did throw a bunch of yards, both were able to do it. But will it go to Taj is the big question there, of course. All right. Before we get to our predictions, our game predictions, big shout out to Alex in the chat for a little for a super chat. We appreciate you. Alex always coming through in the clutch.
Much appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get to our predictions, of course. Over under, all done with. Alicia, the line in Vegas, 14.5. We talked about it before. The Trojans have not been 14.5-point dogs on the road in Autzen since 2011 when the Trojans got a big win. Bill Connolly's SP Plus projection is Oregon 41, USC 28. What is your projection? Will this be the Gary Bryant revenge game, according to Matt in the chat, or will this be a game in which SC channels that 2011 game?
I unfortunately cannot pick USC to win this game. I think it will be 42-35. I like Bill Connolly's projection. I just am putting a garbage time touchdown on the end of it.
Okay. For SC.
Yeah. I don't like this matchup at all, especially because, and we have, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but it's Autzen. I don't think you can go in expecting to see USC's best on offense in Autzen. We have seen USC in difficult environments that and struggle to get things going on offense, and
yeah,
and I don't trust this team to cut out enough of the mistakes that they need to cut out in order to win the game, mm-hmm. especially in a game where I firmly predict Oregon will win the battle at the line of scrimmage. So I don't think it's particularly close. I think the final score is probably closer than it looks in the end.
Okay.
Closer than it was.
Yeah. You say that SC, will they be able to have offensive success in Autzen is the question. SC went into the snake pit that is Folsom Field at elevation against Colorado's vaunted defense on the road and scored 48 points. They went into the absolute hellhole that is Berkeley. Just the true blue hole of Memorial Stadium, and they dropped 50 on the road. This is an Oregon team that, how many times, we talked about it before, has a history of bottling a national championship run in November. And no, I'm not going to bring up the Dennis Dixon thing in 2007. That's horrible.
That was just bad luck.
That was bad luck. That was on the road.
Yeah. What's followed since is, yes, bottling it.
But 2011, number 4 Oregon loses to number 18 USC at home in November. 2012, number 1 Oregon loses at home to number 14 Stanford. 2022, number 6 8-1 Oregon loses at home to number 25 Washington. At least, we talk a lot about football reasons and whether or not there's football reasons to or not to pick anybody. There is no football reason to pick SC, which is why I'm not doing it, because
don't do it.
This has all the makings of an absolute jiggle bagging. But I don't think it will be. I think SC has nothing to play for not nothing to play for. They've got a lot to play for. They've got nothing to lose. And so I think SC can be sort of competitive here. I think that they can maybe have a valiant effort where they lose this game, but you're like, I like their effort. They did what they could. 45-31 is my thought here. I was going to go, I was looking at it, I was thinking that it might play out similarly to the Washington State game a couple weeks ago. The Ducks beat the Cougs 38-24. I liked that margin, except I'm just upping it a touchdown in both directions. So 45-31 is what I have. Oregon beating SC. So not completely a jiggle bag, but sort of, kind of, big margin for SC, 14 points. So, which would be SC covering just barely slightly, kind of, sort of. Yeah. A lily warping of a little bit. So, all right, let's get to the mailbag, shall we?
You've got mail.
All right, let's start with a YouTube comment that we got on the last episode from Jaime, who says, Alicia, for a player to sit calmly on the sidelines when the moment of truth is taking place, in all caps, cannot be defended. He failed as a teammate. Hopefully he learns from it. If injured, okay, but if you can move, you can get up behind, get your behind up and show love and respect, in all caps, to your teammate. I believe this is in reference to Caleb Williams.
And I respectfully disagree. I would encourage you to watch football, to watch games, and pay attention to games where you are not emotionally invested in the outcome, and see how many times you see the quarterback sitting alone on the bench at the, in an end-of-game scenario. You will see it every week, at every level, in every conference, in many, 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 many games. You will see. I remember, like, Tom Brady would sit alone on the bench, on the sideline. Like, it's extremely common for quarterbacks to sit on the bench.
Yeah.
While the game is going on, especially in a stadium where you've got a big screen up on the one side of the field, and you can sit on the bench and watch what's going on. Like, I'm sorry, I don't need my. You and I talked about this, Michael, off air. Like, fans hate the towel waivers. They think they're lame. They think they're stupid. And yet you want Caleb Williams to go be a towel waver? I don't need Caleb Williams to be a towel waver. He does a million other things. He speaks with his play. He speaks with his passion. This is a silly, silly, silly and unnecessary criticism of him.
Yeah, I encourage you to go to YouTube. You're on YouTube if you're watching this live here. Save it or open a new tab maybe. And go look up, put in 2005 USC Notre Dame and watch the fourth quarter. And look where Matt Leinart is in the fourth quarter. He is on the sideline with his helmet in his hands, like his head in his hands for the fourth quarter. And look what happened. He won the game. Like, and there was nobody is denying his effort or any of those things. These are things that people pick out in losses because it's frustrating. And I understand that, like, you don't. I understand why this bothers people, but it should not bother people. It should not bother me. Like, no. we all react differently to trauma. We all react differently to stress. Some people laugh at funerals. Some people cry at funerals. Some people don't go to funerals. Some people, like, you know, enjoy to go to funerals that they don't even know because they like funerals. You know what I mean? Like, everybody is different.
Some people sit in the stands with their head in their hands in a seat and can't watch. Some people rage. Some people turn the game. It's just happening. This is silly. It's absolutely silly. And it's a reflection of the fact that USC lost, not the player.
Yeah.
Cause you wouldn't be saying this if USC had won the game. If the defense didn't get that stop, and they wouldn't have gotten a stop if Caleb Williams was on the sideline, no matter what. If Caleb Williams front and center waving a towel on the sideline, the defense is still not getting that stop.
Yeah. The flip side of this is he leads the comeback drive, and you're like, oh my, look how calm and cool and collected he was on the side. Like, he didn't even look concerned.
Yeah.
He's got ice in his veins. Yeah. Yeah, I don't worry about it.
It's just not it.
Don't that's not a sign of like poor body language to me at all. And there's literally nothing out there that says that Caleb Williams doesn't care. Like, he put so much effort into all this stuff, and the idea that like he's not respecting his teammates. This is the guy who constantly like dotes on his offensive linemen. He took them all to the Heisman ceremony. He's like giving them a million gifts. Like, he is there's nobody in the locker room that thinks that he's one up in, like, we've never heard anything to the contrary there. So
yeah.
Let's get to some questions we've got here on the old YouTubes. SJ says, when was the last time SC was a 2-touchdown dog?
I went to try and look, and it sucks because ESPN gets rid of the line that they have on the Gamecast for last season's games. They don't keep that in place. But I was wondering, so then I started Googling some of the things that USC had in like 2021. So I was Googling. I didn't find the games that I thought that USC might have been a 2-touchdown underdog in 2021. They were not. They were like 7-point underdogs to Notre Dame and BYU. So it probably goes back a lot further than that.
Yeah. I mean, it might be the 2011 Oregon game. Yeah. I don't know. The 2012 Notre Dame game. I don't know what that would have been. I don't know off the top of my head, to be honest with you, but it's, I wish that there was like a historical database. Some sites have it, and then you go, and then they're gone the next time. Like,
there used to be some that I could reliably go to find it, and those sites no longer have it. So yeah. Bama week one 2016. Matt in the chat says that's a good pull, but I don't even know if USC was were they that far underdogs.
It was
double digit underdogs to Alabama. 14-point underdogs. When it opened in January, they were 14-point underdogs. I don't know what the line was.
I don't see it on this. It's a Bleacher Report article from back then. Why didn't I see it? Oh, 9-point favorites.
Yeah, by the time the game rolled around.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't know. It's been a while. SC's not really an underdog type of team, because we know that Vegas likes to make SC the favorite for a lot of things. So, the Utah game in 2015, where Utah was undefeated, number 3 in the country, came to the Coliseum.
USC was a 3-point favorite,
and the Trojans were favored. So, and the Trojans won big with Cam Smith having 3 picks. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. We're going to wrap this up with a question from Rama Murty that says, who are you picking to win Big Brother tomorrow night?
I think Matt wins in a landslide, because Jag will be stupid enough to take Matt with him to the final two if he
can't
he wins.
Be that dumb, right?
He is that stupid, Michael. Yes. Yes. They are both that dumb.
I think we're all going to be losers.
It doesn't matter who wins, because no matter who wins, it will be someone who was incredibly stupid, who actively tried to throw their game away by being actively stupid in the end game, and they only got away with it because everyone else in the end game was way more actively stupid than them.
Yeah, I love Big Brother. It's one of my favorite things. But there is no bigger tradition than getting to the end and being like, God, I hope nobody wins.
Yeah. I if I could have a nobody wins season, trust me, I would take it. Nobody wins this season. I do not care for any of the three that are remaining to be winners. I don't think any of them have earned it personally. But that's just me.
Yeah. Thomas says, what's Big Brother?
It's a show that's
I wonder the same thing.
It's a game. It's a game that is so much better than the show that is produced on television, and it defies all logic. because like the show itself is terrible. The TV show itself is terrible.
Yes.
But the game itself,
the game is
the
good.
Dynamics the TV of show putting is bad. 16 people in a house and having them scheme against each other and having them vote down and through, and like the interpersonal dynamics and the all of the strategy and everything, and the live feeds that you can watch the house all the, you know, 24 hours a day,
yeah,
and see what's going on and all, like that element of it is absolutely incredible. The TV show itself is terrible.
Yeah.
Jack, somehow they turned it into a very awful TV production.
Jack pulling a Cody Cauliflower and losing because he didn't act mad at the end would be probably the most entertaining outcome, but still.
Yeah.
Ugh. Ugh.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to be back Thursday. If you're a member here on YouTube, you can always join us, become a member of the Rot Squad. You get all of our bonus contents, including joining over at the Discord, and then you get to get all of our bonus content, including Thursday night shows, which is our Rent-A-Tour After Dark.
Where maybe we'll be talking about Big Brother on Thursday night, because the finale will
We could happened. Be. Yeah, I'm sure people are dying for more Big Brother talk. I know the chat is now. Absolutely. We'll be back Thursday. $4.99 a month is the entry point for the Rot Squad membership, so you can join us there, help support the show, but you get bonus episodes and you get to talk to us on Discord and all that stuff. So we have a super fun community that we're building, and it's a grand old time. Otherwise, we'll be back Saturday night. It's a late one. 7:30 p.m. Is the kickoff in Eugene. It's on Big Fox and Gulp. It's Brando and Tillman.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You're telling me...
it's Brando and Tillman. Yeah, we shouldn't have canceled. We should have gone to Eugene.
Yeah, we should have gone to Eugene just so we wouldn't have to, yeah. On the plus side, we're not going to Eugene, so we will be on with a car cast shortly after the game.
Yeah.
Because it is a road game. So check these spaces for how to get it.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see you then. Until then, we will see you. See ya.
See ya.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.